Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Look out. It's only films to be buried with.
Hello, and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a best boy, and I love film. As Jodi Picoult once said, "You don't love someone because they're perfect. You love them in spite of the fact that they're not." It's much like the film Bad Times at El Royale. It might not be perfect, but fuck me if it ain't a keeper. Know what I mean? Absolutely, I do, Jodi Picoult. I love that film. Wildly underrated. Every week, I invite a special guest over. I tell them they've died. Then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Barry Jenkins, Kevin Smith, Jamila Jamil, and even Shed Blambles. But this week, it's the brilliant comedian, actor, podcaster, writer, and creator, Mr. Pete Holmes. Get over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. It's a long one, this one. You get an extra 30 minutes with Pete, where we go deep. We talk about beginnings and endings. You get a truly upsetting secret and the whole episode uncut and as a video. Check it out over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. Ted Lasso season 2 is all finished. It's all available now on Apple TV Plus. You can watch the whole thing in one go. Soulmate season 1 is on Amazon Prime. You can watch that in one go. You can watch them both together, separately, one at a time, however we want to do it. Blow your fucking mind. So, Pete Holmes, if you don't know him, he's a comedian, a writer, an actor, a creator, and a podcaster. He's got one of my favourite podcasts called You Made It Weird. I very much recommend it. I met him recently. I was so excited to get him on the podcast. We recorded this on Zoom a few days ago. He is a pure joy. I think I gave him a couple of standing ovations. You are going to love it. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 171 of Films to be Buried With.
Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is me, Brett Goldstein, and I am joined today by a writer, a actor, a podcaster of one of my all-time favourite podcasts, a father, a husband, a stand-up comedian, a legend, a hero, a superstar, and a god amongst men. Please welcome to the show the brilliant, it's Mr. Pete Holmes!
Oh my goodness.
Thank you kindly. Thank you. I just plugged in my headphones during that kind intro because I realized, for tech reasons, I'm so happy to be here. I'm a fan. I've listened to the pod.
Come on.
I enjoy it. I told you off mic that everybody secretly wants to do it. This is the podcast that people play in their head when they're on the toilet or in the shower, and they're like, and then he says, what's the one that's given you a boner that it shouldn't have? And you're like, well, Brett. So it's awesome to actually be here. This is my 2020.
Well, Pete Holmes, you know I'm a massive fan. I love your podcast. It's one of the few podcasts that I listen to on the reg. I think the reason people want to do my podcast is because it's one of the few podcasts you can do where you don't have to talk about what you're working on at the moment. So what are you working on at the moment?
I love it.
But you do have something. You do have, yes, tell us the big news.
I do. Oh, you don't actually want to, the bit is that you don't want to know, that you don't, that I'm
not.
No,
I do. I actually was, it was half a joke and half setting you up to
plug,
talk about the big exciting
to plug. Well, I'm about to do a multicam, which you said, which really made me happy. You said, when a multicam is done right, you went, look out, which made me really happy.
Yeah.
So I am about to start that, which is exciting for a lot of reasons, but maybe towards the top is like being with people acting with people, being on a set with like camera operators and sound people and script supervisors. Like, it just sounds like heaven to me. When I was doing the other shows I've done, you do them long enough, you really do start taking it for granted. And now after this time away, I'm like, I'm going to be amongst humans. Sometimes I like to think about how many hearts are beating in the room. And I'm just like, look at all the hearts beating in this room. How many eyes are kind of floating around, taking in what they can take in. And I was like, we're here together. And I'm super excited to try to be funny and have fun. And when you're just acting, see, you're a writer and an actor. But when you're just acting, I find it's much easier to just be like kind and sort of zen and like sort of float around and be like, well, it's not my decision. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you have to go like, wow, we have to beat this joke or write this new scene or like, oh, they're saying we need to change this. I just get to show up, stand where they tell me to stand, say what they tell me to say, and be a nice person. And I'm excited about that.
Wow. Well, that's interesting, actually, because you have been doing a lot of writing, acting your own stuff. Do you not think you'll be tempted to have a write a stand-up brain, particularly with a live audience, with a mic and... If something, I'm assuming and hoping these writers are all excellent, but if anything kind of doesn't quite land, are you going to be like, oh, as your stand-up brain going to kick in and go, on top of this?
I think it will. But you know what was humbling when we did the pilot is I was like, wow, I'm, you know, the show's called Smallwood. I'm Tom Smallwood. I'm like, look at me. I'm Tom Smallwood. I'm walking around. So we'd do 3-4 takes of a scene. And then I'd be like, I got one. I got an alt. I'm going to try something different on this take. And I would do it, and it wouldn't work. How not funny does it have to be? You're the lead character. They've already seen 3 takes of the way it was written, and now you're changing it up. But you'd get a laugh just based on the novelty alone, and no one was laughing. And I was like, well, it's time to eat some shit and take my humble pill for the day. But we also didn't have like...
That's why they call me Smallwood.
I actually thought when I opened it was going to be about a guy with a tiny, tiny wiener. And it is, but no one's going to know that.
That's just your backstory.
It's more of a front story, a lower to the front. What I'm saying is I have a teeny weeny.
Oh, congratulations. Listen, I think from what I hear, people with teeny weenies just work harder and they're much more creative because they got to make up for stuff. So that's cool.
Like the Great Pumpkin. Being number 2, perhaps you try harder. I watch so many kids' things with my daughter, so the references are going to be a lot of Charlie Brown. Peanuts movie, not bad. Might make my list today.
You put me in a real yes and quandary there because I was like, I don't quite know what the Great Pumpkin is, but there's no way I don't want to yes and it.
Yeah, well.
But here we are.
I won't do it again.
Don't ever do a reference I don't know again or you are off the pod.
That was my can I say, it's a plug of you.
Yeah.
When you did my podcast, I'll never forget it. There literally are moments on my podcast of agreement, of improvisation, of just two people melding that take my breath away. It's one of my favorite things, especially when you don't know each other. And the moment on your episode is when I called someone a bell end. It's one of my favorite British insults. And I'm like, and you bell anded it. Like you yes and, but bell and. And when you knew what I meant when I said thank you for the bell and, I was like, friends. I was like, that's all it takes. I just need some good.
We took each other's shoulders, looked into the eyes and went, friends.
That's right. Friends. Did we just become best friends? Yeah, it was one of those.
Quick, serious question though, if I may, about the multicam. Because I have a thing that I honestly, I'm so fascinated by them. I've worked on one in England, and I genuinely think, you know, they're easy to dismiss when they're average or bad, but when they're good, you think, cheers, Everybody Loves Raymond. Like, these are some of the greatest shows ever. And the writing, the way multicams have to be is they have to be banger after banger. Every line has to be a fucking banger in a way that most sitcoms at a single cam, you can get away with less big fucking jokes. However, the thing that interests me, and it's early days and you haven't done it yet, is how they treat the actual audience in the room. Because that's a real... I think Everybody Loves Raymond was the best at the way the actors reacted to the studio audience. Felt brilliant because the studio Because sometimes you watch things where the studio audience are too excited for how you feel at home watching it. And so it feels weird. It's like a disconnect. You're like, why are they laughing so much? It's not that fucking good.
Yeah.
And it's almost off-putting.
Yeah. You're left out.
Whereas, and there are things like, there are some sitcoms that I won't name, but there are like some good sitcoms, but where it almost feels like they ignore the audience. The studio audience. Studio audience laugh and it's almost an annoyance to them. It's like, yeah, we're just ignoring it and we're getting on with the thing and there's laughter in the background.
Mm-hmm.
But in Everybody Loves Raymond, in particular, I think they were the best at this. They would like sit in the laughs. They'd get a big laugh and there'd be a little, and it was very subtle, but there was like a twinkle in the eye, some acknowledgement from the actors like, this bit is killing. And they would sit in it and it would spread to you at home because it was real. It was like a live connection was going on rather than two separate things, an audience and the show. It was like melding them and then you felt part of it at home.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts, Pete Hopes?
It's like when the Lovers sketch with Will Ferrell and Rachel Dratch and Jimmy Fallon is in the hot tub as well and he's breaking. And I remember there was a time when people were, it was called the 90s, I think. People were just so mad at Jimmy Fallon for laughing.
Yeah.
But those are the ones that I remember because I felt like I was in on something just a little bit wicked, just a little bit alive, electric. Like something was happening that is funny. And I'm not turning on SNL to watch someone do something perfectly. And I'm not watching a multicam to have them pretend like there isn't an audience there. And that is something very interesting about, I think, the human animal is that works. Like, you can be at home. You're not there. It's actually what makes film so amazing. You're not there, but you're transported. Val and I went and saw Cruella. It was the first movie we saw after the pandemic, after we were allowed to. I'm not being dismissive of Cruella. I thought it was a really good movie, great movie.
That was great.
And it was what was out. So we went and saw kind of like a kid's movie, even though we're two parents kind of desperately wanting a break from kids' movies. But it ended up being really great. I really loved it. And
it's great.
There's something about cinema, don't get me started, but sitting in the dark is a small ego death. You disappear. You're in the dark. You can't even see yourself. You're gone. It's like a drug experience or a vision. Let's say vision to not exclude people, or a dream. So you vanish. Not only do you vanish into the dark, you vanish into the audience. There's anonymity in the numbers that you're now a group called an audience watching a movie. And then that audience vanishes and the lights dimming is kind of like a cue to your lizard brain to be like, okay, shut the fuck up. You're now going to have these people's thoughts. We were talking about like when I go to music concerts, I don't go to a lot as evidenced by the fact that I call them music concerts. That's an old joke of mine, but it's true. I don't need to be sitting there with my own brain for 2 hours, especially if it's not, if it's Beyonce, that's a spectacle and you're like really into it. But if it's just like a band and they're playing nice music, I'm too up here. I love cinema grabs you and goes, you're now this person and someone's chasing you. Oh no. And you're in love with two people. Who are you going to pick? And at the end, the lights come up and it's like coming out of a vision or a drug experience and you go back into your body. And I'm reverent when I leave a movie. I do not start talking about what I think about until we're home. I hate the people that start going like, it wasn't as good as Ultimatum, but it was better than Greengrass's Wreck with Damon in the Non-Born series. You know, I don't, you're supposed to shut the fuck up. You just came back from a psychedelic experience. Have some reverence. Even if you think you didn't like it, maybe you weren't supposed to like it. Good example. Schenectady, New York. You're not supposed to like it. You're supposed to feel the monotony and the drag and the craving of the ending of the movie in the same way that the character is craving death. He wants to die. And they're making you feel that. So don't go like, I didn't like it. Where was Optimus Prime? Shut the fuck up and like feel maybe something uncomfortable or inconvenient. So I also, this is the other theory I want to put to you. It looks like I've loaded you good. The camera lens is a dilated pupil. It's an open eye. So if you've ever been in a meditative state or in love, you know, when you're aroused, I don't mean sexually aroused, when your nervous system is aroused, your eyes, your pupils dilate and you take in so much more. You take in so much more light, so much more detail. That's what a camera lens is. And then we blow up that image huge and let your lenses scan a perfect lens shot and pick what to focus on. It is a transcendent experience. I didn't plan on saying any of this, but that's why I love the movies. You have like a vision.
Pete Holmes, the last 2 minutes of watching you on the screen is now my answer to Troubling Bonus.
Yes. Yes.
That was, that was so wonderful.
I roll away. Thank you.
You're so right on all of it.
Right.
It's a really, really, really beautifully put. And it is entirely what you have said is entirely why I always argue against people watching films at home. When people go, oh, I can watch it at home. And you go, but you don't get that. You don't get the ego death. You don't get the, and you don't get lost. It's about losing yourself.
Yeah.
It's very hard to lose yourself at home, even if you've got a good sound system and you can turn your lights down. You're still at home. You've got your phones, you've got your kids, you've got your whatever.
I agree.
You have to surrender to it. It's hard to surrender at home. That's
you get stirred into it. It's like at the end, the trance is broken and you realize, oh, I'm not Jason Bourne, or I'm not whoever it might have been. I'm not Meryl Streep's character, or whatever it is. And we went and we watched Cruella again at home. Mm-hmm. And when we saw it, the soundtrack is incredible. And when you see it in a movie theater, it's blasting the Rolling Stones. It's blasting the Rolling Stones. And you're just like, aah! Like, try to not like the Rolling Stones when they're that loud. And then at home on our little TV with the curtains open, not even dark, it was fine. I could see how someone would watch that movie and be like, it was fine. But I remember that Mission Impossible where Tom Cruise has to jump into a whirlpool of water and he has to go right into the middle of it and hold his breath for 3 minutes? That's what going to the movies is you have to jump into that hole. And that's why it's so offensive when someone is scrolling through old texts that happened to me in a movie or answering their phone or whatever, is because like a comedy show, you are resisting the communal mind. You are now not the audience. You are Steve, and Steve is answering his phone right now. And you're breaking a trance for a lot of people that need it. Human beings need escape. And when we get to my answers, the movies that I watch over and over are the ways that I process. I just had like a weird dinner and I knew the movies I had to watch to help me process and get perspective on these strange feelings. So it's therapy. It's learning that you're not alone. You know, when you see a movie and you just have to go for a drive afterwards because you're just like, just brought you into the moment and it brought you into life and it reminded you of the infinite possibilities that you can move in any direction, that you can fall in love, that you can get angry, that you can see something you never thought you'd see. And you just have to drive. That was me, Good Will Hunting, 1997. We're just like, let's go for a drive. That's the magic. And that's why it's offensive when someone's eating their popcorn too loudly.
Pete, if I ever die, I might leave you the podcast in the will and you could take it over.
I love it.
Here's the thing. The other thing you're talking about, you mentioned a lot of like big films. You talk about Born Out of May. You talk about Mission Impossible, Cruella and stuff. But I also I get super mad with people when they're like, oh, yeah, that's a film you can watch at home. It's like, there is no film you can watch at home. And I'm going to probably keep talking about this film every week on this podcast. I saw Mass the other day. Mass, have you seen it?
I haven't, but someone told me they saw it and they wept.
Like, yeah, it's four. It's essentially four people in a room for most of the film. And it's the sort of film some people could say, well, it's like a play. And some people would say, well, you could just watch it at home. It's just people talking. It is a fucking cinematic experience. And it is so intense. And it is so... it's a masterpiece from every angle, writing, acting, directing, everything. There's no way you have to surrender to it. It's as intense, more intense than a fucking Bourne film. Like I was holding my breath the whole time. It was like, this is, as much cinema as Tom Cruise jumping in a waterfall.
I feel the same way about Frost Nixon, which if you rewatch Frost Nixon after the Trump presidency, it gives you a whole new perspective on it. Because I wasn't there for the Nixon, but you're like, imagine if James Corden interviewed Donald Trump. Yeah, and we were like, oh! But it is just a play. It is a play made into a film, but it has the same stakes. But that's, you know, that's what theater is. Theater is like they're there. If someone's going to be or not to be, and they're feeling it, and you're in the room, there's tension, and that yanks out the stakes. Like, it makes you invested in it. And that's what the movies are doing in the theater setting. There is even like an unspoken frequency that I think good audiences are trying to transmit, where it's like, we're gonna do this good, right? I need this. Like, I need this. Yeah. That's why the commercials at the beginning aren't the right feel. It should be all movie related. It should be movie trivia. Or it should be quiet. Yeah. Or it should be just looking at the curtain and you're just like, what's it gonna be behind that curtain? I don't want someone being like, what's up, FastPass? If you wanna see more exclusive action only for you, sign up and scan this QRC code now. And I'm just like, fuck you. We just saw the new James Bond, and they were showing scenes from the movie we were about to see.
Oh, yeah, that's insane.
To promote the app or something, the video game or something. And I was like, then we're watching the movie, and I'm like, why is this familiar? And I'm like, it's because we had the decency to show up 10 minutes early, and you're punishing me? Nobody needs that. Get the fuck out of here.
One thing... I just to go back to where this all started, just because I don't know if there is an answer to it. I'm just curious. On Littlewood, Smallwood, have you, the execs, the people making it, have had a discussion at all about how you're going to be treating the audience, or do you think it's something you will just find when you make it?
Well, I think it remains to be seen if there's going to be an audience because of Coco. There might be a small audience. So my dream would be to do it for a live audience. I had some friends, I had some friends that wrote on Friends, and they were telling me about how much fun the actors would have, exactly what you're saying, playing to it. And I had a little guest role on Mulaney, so that was a multicam that I got to act in. And it was so fun being a stand-up and knowing... Yeah. See, stand-up is not just the audience listening to the comedian. That's not a very compelling art form. It's actually both. The audience is listening to the comedian, and a good comedian, not all of them, but a good comedian is so, I'm going to be weird and say, like a lover is listening to the audience. You're agreeing, aren't
Hundy
you?
Hundy P.
Hundy P, and we don't mean pence, because we mean 100%.
We mean 100%.
So you leave with the material, but you also leave with the sensation of someone was so tuned into you that if you made a certain kind of silence, they knew what you meant. And everyone leaves mutually beneficial. Like, we all were seen and heard today. So when I did Mulaney, I remember, like, exactly what you're saying, trying to manufacture that twinkle in the eye, that sort of, like, just slight upturned smile, like, I know you like this, or I know you would do this. You're such a cad. Doing something that you know isn't gonna make it, like isn't gonna make it on the show. I love those because it's about a tone. If you just film a show, who fucking cares? But if there's a happening occurring, that's really special.
Yeah, that's the thing that makes life. And you did it very well in HBO's Crashers. The capturing live. It's so hard to capture live, and the feeling of being there is very hard. Anyway.
Yeah.
I've forgotten to tell you something. I've just realized.
What?
Oh, fuck, Pete. I'm so sorry. No. I know you had this big gig happening. I should have told you this.
No.
I actually probably should have just sent you an email or something. And do you know what? I should have been brave and said this earlier, just face to face. I should have called you, maybe FaceTime.
I don't like where this is going. This. No. No.
Well.
No.
And I know you've got so much. You had so much. I'll just say it.
What is it?
Oh, God. I feel sick.
Just tell me what it is. It's okay.
Is it? Okay. You've died. You're dead.
That's
You're dead.
That's not okay.
You're dead.
I'm dead.
Dead. Dead.
I don't...
How did you die?
Wait.
You don't want that?
It's
too late?
If I... But I...
I know.
What yeah. What if there is an afterlife and you're like, but I was watching Succession! How did I die? I was in a motel, a seedy motel, and I heard some...
Love this?
I heard some stray cats in the wall. It, like I said, it was a seedy motel. Wow. And there was a hole in the wall, seedy, mm-hmm. and I tried to put my arms in to rescue the cats. They mm-hmm. needed help. But I couldn't get in enough. So I took my shirt off, and I put lotion all over my body, and I tried to get in, but I still but I still couldn't get in enough. So I took my I took my pants off, and I covered myself in lotion all over my family, my crown jewels, and I'm all over, and I'm trying to wedge in to save the cats. But again, I can't. Now I'm worried I'll go too far in. So I put like little clamps on my nipples, and I tie the nipple clamps to the lamp in the stay with me to the hotel room, and then so I'm going in and I start kind of rubbing, and I have the nipple clamps and I'm trying to get the cats, and the friction gives me a boner, and then I go on the bed and I die, and I because I have an aneurysm, and when I die I jizz, and then when they find me it looks like I was just having a wank.
Right.
But I'm telling you
telling the truth.
I was trying to say, I'm so glad you asked, because I've needed to clear this. Yeah. I've needed to clear this. I was trying to rescue cats, not masturbate in a motel that looks like it was designed for masturbating.
It is. It's annoying how often this death comes up on this podcast. the old looks like I wanked to death. Death.
Oh my God. Wait, it looks like I wanked to death is a real one?
Oh, no, I'm joking.
That would be so funny if everyone was like, I'm afraid that it's going to look like I wanked.
You're the first.
I'm the first.
You are the first.
Wow. I'm honored.
I'm when I'm filing that police report, I'm just going to struggle with the nipple clamps explaining that. I don't quite get what the thinking was to save the cats.
Well, I didn't want to get sucked into the cat hole. What if it was an alternate dimension and I was like, I'm using my hands, I'm using my knees and my feet, I need something, and I go, earlobes, too risky, nips.
You know what? It was a heroic death.
Thank you, that's what I'm saying. Well, the cats died. The cats died.
Oh. Yeah.
They
but you tried.
The cats are, they're all dead.
They're all dead, and you're dead. So what it looks like is that you wanked yourself to death.
Killed some cats.
Looking at dead cats.
That's it.
Was your kink.
I can only do it if there are dead cats. Oh, no! Well, we've done it! We've made it the worst answer!
Quite the legacy you're leaving.
Could possibly be.
Do you worry about death, Pete Holmes?
I think about death a lot. It's part of my, oh God, my spiritual practice. but it is, there's a great, Ram Dass quote. He's like, when you accept, I'll start actually with the Tao Te Ching. The Tao Te Ching says, he who finds, or she who finds their way in the morning can gladly go in the evening. That's one of my favorite little stanzas in the Tao Te Ching. And I find that to be one of the meanings of life, is to prepare for death. I don't want to go like the science project and go like, that was due today! Like, I would like to be like, oh, right, we've given this its due. There's another great Chinese proverb that says, death and love are the two great gifts most people leave unopened. Meaning it's not an error. It's part of what imbues the whole thing with meaning. And it's a clue to kind of how it works, impermanence, learning to let things go, learning to... We say on my podcast all the time, would ice cream taste good if you knew you lived forever? I don't think so. I actually think you're eating ice cream and you're kind of like, I'm going to die and I'm eating ice cream right now. This is fucking awesome. But if you were just kind of floating in the ether, orgasms whenever you want, ice cream whenever you want, whatever, whenever you want, I think you would create this. And you know what's good evidence for that? That this exists. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like an interesting way to think of God as something that could do whatever it wanted. Alan Watts says, if you could have an orgasm that just keeps getting better and better and better, how many years would you do that for? How many thousands of years? And then he goes, how long would you do it before you make a button that says something happens? And that just changed my life when I heard him say that. I was like, we want some degree of not being in control. We want to have mystery to grapple with. We want to have loss to grapple with. So yeah, I think about it a lot. And because of, and we don't have to get into this, but because of certain psychedelic experiences, my death anxiety has shrunk to the size of a pebble. And I would say it used to be sort of a Mount Rushmore, sort of like, oh no. Yeah.
So you were masturbating nonstop relentlessly. And then Alan Watts said at some point, there a button will appear that says something happened and you stopped. You went, oh, I should get on with things actually.
I'm glad that's what you took from it. I'm glad that's what really, you got.
Oh my God. Stop relentlessly masturbating because there's ice cream to get to.
Oh my but God.
What? No, but come on. No, seriously.
Belen.
No.
Oi. Stop it.
Can you tell me, when you say the psychedelic stuff, you don't have to go into all of them, but as in, have you done stuff that's made you think you've seen the other side or anything like that?
Yes. And well, to summarize, I think I can summarize it quickly because we all just want to, we want to get to the films.
Oh yeah, I forgot. I forgot that's what we're here.
You are fun. The summary is, and you can, I hope you keep this. I'll say the short one first and then the slightly longer one, is people are afraid of the void, right? If I could tell you something that I have experiential understanding is true, meaning I can still hear my brain going like, that might not be true, but something deeper has occurred, something has transformed, and I really know this in my bones to be true, is you are the void. So there's no blackness coming to get you that isn't you, that isn't the all and the everything. And that when you die, it's like being a spoonful of sugar and you're stirred into a glass of iced tea. And bread is gone, but bread is also there because everything that ever was, is, or ever would be is all there at once and time has stopped. A good metaphor for that would be heaven. Oh, there are my dead relatives, but it's really much crazier and wilder than that. And there's nothing to be afraid of because it's you. That's really, if you were dying today, I would say, Brett, trust yourself, because your consciousness, what science and you and I would call consciousness, that is your truest, deepest self. And that consciousness is divine. So you aren't going anywhere. What isn't God is being stripped away. And what is God remains. And that is a fucking, you could call that the good news. That's like fucking good news. And when you worry about the world, I go, like, I have a bit about this. I go, like, it'll be okay. And I go, I don't mean us. I don't mean humanity. Like, we could be like dinosaurs. I mean, who you really are is life itself. You are life itself. Life itself is looking out your eyes, beating your heart, filling your lungs, and it walks around and pretends that it's Brett. Oi, I'm on a show called Ted Lasso. And you go around. That's all just play. That's what my daughter's name means. Leela means the play of the universe. And the good news is you are something eternal, and that is consciousness itself. And when you die, like a lobster, you're pulled out of its shell. Bread is left behind, the red pinchy part, but the meat goes up and in and out and stirred. And bad news is, like this show, you are gone. Good news is you are and always have been everything. And if that sounds woo-woo, I could point to the Old Testament. I could point to Buddhism, Hinduism, and the New Testament and back that up.
I love it. It's nearly made me cry.
Well, that's great because that means you heard me. It's like really good stuff.
Oh, I did hear you. It is really good stuff. You ended on You Are Everything, but you started on You Are the Void, and that hit me hard.
Yeah.
That hit me hard.
That's one of my mantras. I would recommend meditating and say, I am the void. I am the void. You are what you're afraid of. And that's absurd. It's afraid. You're afraid of yourself. You can trust yourself. It's you. It's you. It's you. It's great. It's great news.
So that is it. Who is that guy? The philosopher? Is it a philosopher? You stare into the void, and at some point, the void stares back.
Yeah, I've heard that too. I can't recall who said it,
but and that is like. So you're just saying, yeah, that's looking in the mirror.
Exactly.
He's looking in the mirror.
Well, it's basically the idea that nothing doesn't exist. That's a good one. Nothing doesn't exist. Like, there is no nothing. And, like, I have a joke. It never really works that well. But I go, you know, some of my atheist friends think you die and you just become nothing. And I'm like, in Buddhism, that's called wishful thinking. That means liberation. That means you go into the nothing, the big nothing, the no thing. You are not an object. You are what other traditions would call God. You become no thing. You become beyond objectness, beyond thingness. That is, and atheists are just like, no, by not believing, I'll just get that. They're like, no, you have to like go around and around and around until you realize that that's what you've always been, or whatever, or however you want to paraphrase it. But when the other bit that I do is we're all stuck with the Big Bang. I say, thanks for nothing. Meaning it's just like an explosion and everything is here. And when you picture it in a film way, it's like darkness and then something explodes, but it's not darkness. It's nothing. It's nothing. You can't even picture nothing. Yeah. Like, you can't film it. It's nothing. It is nothingness. And then for some reason, that nothingness erupts into everything. So even if you're, and most of my friends, and I love them dearly, are atheists and agnostic, and I love them dearly. I'm not trying to change anyone's mind. I'm saying we're all on the same page, basically. You have nothing erupting into everything. I anthropomorphize that nothing energy into something that we call God, a metaphor for a mystery, something we don't understand, something we can't understand. So I call it God, you call it nothing. What's the fucking difference? Either way, you have nothing erupting into everything, or you have God erupting into everything. You have something science can't prove, touch, taste, photograph. We have no evidence of nothing, or something you can't see, touch, taste, photograph. We have no evidence of God. We're all on the same side. No one knows what the fuck is going on here. That's why my shit is get in touch with the God in you. Get quiet, get still, and recognize that there's something, there's isness in you. You are the experience of isness. You are isness. It is passing through you. It's how you're hearing me right now. Well, that's your consciousness. It's hearing, it's absorbing, it's coming into you. That is your deepest DNA, and that will always be fine. Bad news, you'll go. And by the way, I understand I haven't died, so I don't know. But I did have an experience, a very, very convincing experience, where I was like, don't worry, you're a lobster.
Well, I got news, buddy. You are dead. You are gone. But you are everything, and also the void, and you are in heaven. You know what heaven is? Nothing. Heaven is nothing. It is everything, and it is a void.
And you are
sugar in some green tea. Some green tea. You didn't expect that.
Yeah, I didn't.
And it's not ice. It's hot. It's hot in heaven. Surprise. It's hot green tea. A little bit of caffeine, not too much. It's not going to freak you out. It's just to wake you up.
Yes. About 35 milligrams.
Heaven. Nothing. Just a little sprinkling of caffeine. Just a little like, oh, because you're a bit jet lagged. You've just got there. What is this place?
Yes.
And it's filled with your favorite thing. What's your favorite thing?
In the world?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's cheesy, but my wife and daughter.
Your wife and daughter are there. But here's the thing. There's shitloads of them. It's wall to wall, your wife and daughter. It's like they've been cloned. It's nice and simultaneously a bit scary, like 300 Leelas run at you. And they're like, Daddy, as one. And they like, rah, rah, like sort of cover you.
Like,
and then Val's like,
yeah,
Pete. And it's just like a mountain.
Tidal wave of mouse. Okay.
And you go.
My favorite other thing, angel food cake. Very on the nose. I like angel food cake.
Well, the furniture is made of angel food cake.
Oh, okay.
And so you can sit, you can eat it, you can just sit on it, you can sleep on it. It's comfortable. It's a good texture.
Yes.
But also, if you're bored in bed, you can just start eating your bed. It's great. It's nothing and it's great. And it's everything. Anyway, when you're there, everyone that's there that is mostly clones of Val and Leela, they are so excited you're there, but they want to talk to you about your life. They want to talk to you about your life through film. Because you know what they're like. Leela and Val are completely upset. Leela in particular, always talking about film. You're like, shut up, Leela. There are other things. Anyway, they want to know about film. They go, what's the first film that you remember seeing, Pete Holmes?
Can I share that on the document that you sent out, it says E.G. So, for example, E.T. Yeah. Do you have to use a movie that's also two letters? I'm like, what's E.G. E.T.? Yeah. Is this a DNA code? E.G. E.T.
E.G. E.T.A.
A.S.A.P.
P.I.V.
I'm going to tell you the first film that I remember seeing in the theater. And it's 1991, which means right. I've definitely seen loads of movies. But the reason why this one stands out is because I was in Woburn, Massachusetts, and my dad and my brother and I were going to the movies. And like the movie, The Squid and the Whale, my family really was like two teams. It was my brother and my dad and me and my mom. So I was sort of with the other side. Right. Like the mama's kid is with dad and brother. So we're being men. Yeah. And the choice of what movie to see came to me. Somehow it came to me, and I was like, we're going to see Drop Dead Fred. We're going to see it. I am putting down the hammer. We're going to see Drop Dead Fred. Because an imaginary friend who's like funny and I think British randy and wild, I was like, this is going to be great. And if they had enjoyed it, I would have enjoyed it. But they hated it. So their hate oozed onto me, and then I was filled with the shame of making them watch this movie. Even my brother sold me out and didn't like Drop Dead Fred. You gotta like Drop Dead Fred. He's looking up ladies' skirts and stuff. He's wild. That's exactly what little kids want. But yeah.
Is he older or younger, your brother?
He's 2 years older than me, so.
That's horrible. There's nothing worse than sitting with someone who isn't enjoying the film. That's why I don't like taking anyone to the cinema. It's not worth the risk.
I've heard you say that on the pod. Yeah, you're like, just go alone.
Horrific.
Yeah.
Horrific experience. Because you also feel that shame is so weird. It is like a feeling like you made it, like you made this film.
Yes.
And it's not, you didn't make that film, but you feel the shame of like, oh, I'm so sorry I put you through that.
Yes.
Awful.
That's absolutely right. I still remember my dad had his hand on his forehead like this. And dude, without making it too much like my show, he is a sexual imaginary friend. Like he is sort of like the id. And like, I was like, I swear I don't like this stuff. Cause he's like, look at that bird's titties. And I'm going like, I don't want to look at any bird's titties. It was horrible. I would have preferred to seen The Exorcist. And my dad, before that, here's another answer. He was watching Goodfellas in the living room, and I saw the knife scene with the trunk. And I was like, I didn't make that face. And you make that face for Drop Dead Fred? I pretended to like Goodfellas for you.
Hey, you know what? Your dad was looking in the mirror, and he didn't like that you could see that he was looking at himself, and there he was, Drop Dead Fred.
Oh my God.
That was a big thing that was going on there. He felt if you can see him relate to this film, you'll see him. So he has to pretend that he's horrible. You're showing a mirror to him. Yeah.
Can I say, every time I would come in and my dad was watching The Sopranos, he would turn it off, not to keep me from seeing it, but to keep me from seeing him see it. I swear to you, I remember it vividly. Tony's looking at a stripper and eating like carrots or something. And my dad was like, that's a sad life. And like turned it off. And I was like, you're 42 minutes deep into an hour episode. You're going to turn it off because I walked in. My dad's still that way. He saw George Carlin, and he goes, it was great. The first thing he said was, fuck Oprah, fuck Lance Armstrong, and fuck somebody else. And then he went, there's no need for that kind of language. Like, he remembered he was my dad. I was probably 25 at the time, and I was like, I'm glad we can relate. Yeah, that's funny. Yeah. And then he was like, you don't have to, that filthy language. I was like, oh, fuck. We were so close to being people.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's really good. What is the film that scared you the most? Do you like being scared, Pete Holmes?
Not really. I don't.
Why is that? Is that because you're a big baby?
Oh my God. I don't. It's just not for me. This isn't my answer, but I remember seeing the movie. I walked out of The Others. When they were like, there's a grandma and she has bad breath. I was like, bye. I was so happy to walk out. I was just like,
really?
It was like Mark Wahlberg in Three Kings. I'm sure it is. Remember Mark Wahlberg in Three Kings when he gets released from the torture? He's so happy.
Yes. And he's like, hi. Yeah.
Yes. I was that high because I didn't have to ever see that grandma. I still haven't. And then there's the one where the people knock on the door. It's Liv Tyler.
The Strangers.
And I watched all of The Strangers and I'm like, I wish I hadn't seen that. Anytime I'm home alone or in the woods, one of God's beautiful gifts, the woods, the little cabin in the woods.
Never in a film.
Not anymore.
Never in a film.
Did you watched it too?
No, I'm saying woods are never good in a film.
No.
They're never good.
No. The one that scared me the most is embarrassing because you'll never have gotten this. I promise. I have the hiccups. The Fourth Kind. And I'm going to tell you why The Fourth Kind
alien
scared
film.
Me. Yeah, alien film.
Alien film from about 10 years ago.
I think it was more than 10 years ago because I was in New York. Well, wait. Yep. It was probably 15 years ago. So I was old enough to know better. But as I've already said, I don't really see a lot of horror movies. And the conceit of The Fourth Kind is, and I don't mind ruining it because I never hear anyone talking about The Fourth Kind. Let's put it that way. The Fourth Kind tells you that it's real. It's telling you this is found footage. It's using like body cams. It's using security footage. It's using like cruiser footage, and it's shot in a way that you'd think it was a documentary, and there's reenactments, but like most of it is like VHS footage, and I'm embarrassed. It worked. I thought it was real because, Brett, at that age, I was like, they can't lie. They can't lie to us. Oh, right. It opens with Mira Sorvino. Is that her name? And she's like, hi, I'm actress Mira Sorvino. Like talking down the lens, going like, this is not a movie. This is real. Like she's telling you. And I'm sitting there going, it is. Mira Sorvino said it's real. And the premise of the movie is not only are you going to be abducted, and it shows that, you probably already have been abducted dozens of times and you don't remember. That's what The Fourth Kind is. The Fourth Kind is an abduction. So I had a roommate, but I was like, you know, sleeping alone. And every night after that movie, I was thinking these weird Sumerian speaking aliens were going to come in and take me. And then someone told me it was fake and they made fun of me mercilessly, but I didn't even care. It was like five comedians were ripping into me for being a huge idiot. And all I was thinking, I mean, they were being really vicious. And I was smiling ear to ear because I was like, thank God that wasn't real. That's the most scared. That's the most scared I was.
That's nice. I want to see that film. I want to see a film with Mira Savino saying, hello, I'm Mira Savino, and what you're about to watch is real.
Well, that, you'd only have to watch the trailer. I believe that's the trailer as well. And they, looking back, there are parts, I mean, it would never trick me now knowing what we know about movies and stuff. But like, there's a suicide in it. Someone shoots himself and they blur it. And you're like, why would they blur it if it was, like, they just show it and they blur it, like, out of respect for the dead. It's like pixelated. Yeah. It, like, they did a good job to me.
I like that. What's the film that made you cry the most? And are you a crier? Do I need to ask?
Film is one of the ways that I cry. It's one of the things I like about it, is that it helps me to cry. Moonlight, I can't not cry the entire movie. I cry the entire movie. Without boring you, I think that movie has like a divine second meaning, which is we all know that there's something that loves us and that we love it. And we sort of have to, like, we resist it. We become strong. Chiron becomes strong and he puts in his grills and he gets his gun. No one's ever going to hurt him again. And that's our personalities. We build up these personalities. But truth, in his case, that he's a homosexual, truth is chasing you. God initiates it. Beauty and mystery initiates it. If you're called to meditation or prayer, you're always seconding the motion. And that scene at the end where he's cooking for him, that's love. We don't have to say it's God. Love is seducing you. Love is cooking for you and sprinkling the cilantro on the rice. Why does that scene matter so much? Why does the film work when you never see them make love? You think it's going to end in like a sex scene. You don't need the sex scene. The sex scene is him cooking. The sex scene is him looking at him and knowing him and touching his hand. And that is my belief, is that that truth, your truth on the psychological level and also on a cosmic level, is putting the good sheets on the bed. It wants you. It's something that wants you. It's not a tormentor. It's not going to kick you into hell for being who you were. It's not like that. It wants to merge with you. It wants to make love with you, basically. And that's what that movie is. So I lose it. But then also just on the surface level, when he asks what is a, I think it's the F word. He says, what does that word mean?
Yeah.
I'm just losing it. Losing it. So that movie is definitely one of them.
That's a very, very, very good answer.
I cry at most films. The one I remember is, and that's true, if my heart is open, I'll find something to cry at in almost any movie. But Dead Poets Society is the first one, because it was Burlington, Massachusetts, and I'm weeping at O Captain, My Captain, and the woman in front of me, this birdie twat, turned around and looked at me with shame. She gave me the shame look, like, get a hold of yourself. And I wish I wish I had her home address just so I could send her a vase full of dog shit. Like, who shames? I must have been 11, 12. Wow. Her look seemed to say, you're too young to even get this. I'm like, this movie's about people my age. I get this better than you get it. Like, it was a rough one.
I'm sorry.
And Matrix Revolutions. I'm just kidding.
So many shame visits to the cinema. It's
I know.
What is the film that you love? It is not critically acclaimed. Most people don't like it, but you think those people are wrong and dumb and you hate them.
I don't know. I should have looked it up. But I'm assuming the movie Lucy is not critically acclaimed.
I love Lucy, and you're right. Lucy is a mixed bag, and I know a lot of people that hate Lucy, and they're idiots and they're dumb.
Thank Lucy's you. Great. Lucy. So what? All the side, sort of like whatever you, these sidebars, these little spiritual sidebars I have. That's what that movie is. When you realize that the sap in a tree is moving up, which it is, it moves against gravity. When you realize that a spring is moving up a mountain to come down the mountain, like these insane world we live in. When she talks about remembering the taste of her mother's milk, you just, that movie is imbued, I'm going to say imbued again, with so much comfort. And like, if we knew more, we would worry less. That's like the point of that movie. And I just love watching Scarlett Johansson be so calm. You have all the fun of like what was that? Nobody. Movies like Nobody. The ass-kicking guy who never gets shot. You know, Nobody. Yeah. But you get that with like metaphysical sprinklings. And I think a stylized direction that is really effective.
I really like that film. You get, do you know what? You get 10 points for that. It's the first answer you've given that scored weirdly. What is the film that you used to love, you loved it very much, and then you've watched it recently and you don't love it anymore? And that might be completely personal reasons or something's changed in your life. What is that film and why?
I'm glad you said it could be personal reasons, because I think Field of Dreams may still be a good movie. But here's what I just tried to rewatch it. Here's what I didn't like about it. Or what felt very 90s about it.
Right.
If you made a movie now about a guy who makes a baseball field and ghosts show up, when those ghosts show up, the first thing a modern 2021 audience would want to know is like, how did you get here? Where were you? Where have you been? What do you think is happening? Like, how do we replicate it? Is it science? Is this a wormhole? Is there a fold in the dimensions? And in Field of Dreams, he builds a baseball field.
Yeah.
First of all, it doesn't show him looking up how the dimensions of That's a baseball brilliant. Field. He just knows how to right. do it. We would want the Google scene.
You're right. you're missing. You're like, there's not enough admin at the start.
I want it to
you
feel.
Want the admin.
I want some admin. Is that a real term?
It is now. You want some admin.
I didn't know if it was a writer's room term. I want more pipe of how he knew how to do it. But in the movie, he makes the field. Then there's sort of an arbitrary waiting where it's Christmas and he's literally looking out the window and he's like, Shoeless Joe, where you at, buddy? And you'd think something might happen in his life or in him that would change, that would make the ghost show up. But it really was just waiting. Like, it was just like, just wait. Maybe that's fine. Shoeless Joe does show up. Yeah. It's like one of those trailers you could cut as a horror trailer.
Yeah.
Because he built a field and then a ghost shows up. And when the ghost shows up, the wife character says, this is what she says, Brett, to the arrival of a ghost. And even worse, as predicted from a voice. So like, this is now confirmed as real. Your husband is communicating with the other side and there's a ghoul on your lawn. She says, I'll put on some coffee. Then he goes out and all they do is play baseball. He just starts pitching baseballs to him. And the way that the movie addresses the absurdity of what's happening is Kevin Costner, our parents, Brendan Fraser, Kevin Costner is pitching the ball and he goes, I'm pitching to Shoeless Joe Jackson. That's how they address it. And all I'm saying, I'm not saying it's a bad movie. I'm saying what makes it feel dated and what made me not enjoy it was that it's not doing what modern films do, which is when something supernatural happens, they play it for real. In this movie, they were like, look, we got to get to the better stuff. We can't have a 30-minute sequence of him being like, wait, do you remember how you got here? Like, why are you the age you were when you played baseball, not the age you were when you died? Like, are you frightened? And she just goes, I'll put coffee on. She should have said, I'm going to get the fuck out of here. There's a ghost.
Pete Holmes, I've never done this before. I'm taking away the 10 points I gave you.
Those
10 points
God.
Are being removed. I'm very, you know what? I'm not angry. I'm disappointed. And I'll tell you why. Because when you were describing it to me, it gave me shivers. And I'm shocked that you find it this way. Because the film, what you just described to me and what I remember of it, is all the divine, is all the things. The reason she says, I'll put coffee on, the reason he doesn't ask questions is because he's had this voice, he's had this vision, he's had this thing. It's like a dream. If he pushes it, he might wake up and it all goes away. They're all living in this fucking divine space where it's like they believe in this thing, but they're also, are we mad to believe in this thing? And then the thing starts happening and it's like, of course they don't poke it and ask questions because it might all go away. They might, are we insane? It's like, I'll put coffee on. You go out there and you play with him. Don't ask questions. Like, he's a baseball player and he's coming and thinking, he looks freaked out. No one knows what the fuck's going on. Let's fucking just like keep it safe over here.
I understand. It's like a dream. Don't wake up.
It's like a dream. If we ask something, you're gonna go. He's gonna go.
I look. I'm not married to my opinion because everything you said made perfect sense to me, and I'm not saying that to try and get those 10 points back. Although I would. I also want to say that it's one of those movies that my dad liked, so I was watching it with a chip on my shoulder. So that could be it.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna.
Nope.
For
don't.
No, you could. I'm going to give you 3 points back for acknowledging that. And I'm sorry. Listen, I don't like to be combative.
I'm going to go you know what? Now I'm going to push back. I'm going to go put coffee on. Can we do it again, Brett? I'm the director now.
Yeah.
Can we just one where you have a moment where you're like, and someone goes, no, don't overthink it. I'm going to put coffee on. Just go see him. Just go out there. Just go see him. A little bit of the holy fuck.
Yeah. What do I do? I don't know. Throw a baseball.
I can't go out. I heard a voice. And now there's a fucking ghost. I'm just saying that is the more modern way of shooting that same scene with the same script.
It's happening in her eyes, in Amy Madigan's eyes.
Madigan.
In her eyes, she's going, fucking hell, what do I do? I'll put some coffee on. She's doing it. It's all there, Pete. Come on. Because you were watching it at home. You weren't on a big screen. You watch it at the cinema. You'd be like, oh, yeah, I'm here in the dream.
I think you're absolutely right. I'm not just agreeing to be agreeable. I'm going to give you one worse. I watched it in the sauna. And sauna movies, I have very low
patience. How long do you sit in a sauna?
Isn't it 50 minutes?
So I 5-0?
5-0. So I'm watching movies in two chunks.
And the TV is in the sauna.
That's what that is. That little crane thing. That's the iPad stand.
Oh, I see.
I know.
Now, you know, I love health and shit. What's the benefit of sitting in a sauna for 50 minutes?
I love that I get to tell you something that you don't know about fitness.
I do ice stuff. I don't do hot stuff.
I do that. And then I get into a cold shower. It'll get you nice and high. It's proper high.
What's happening in the 50 minutes in the sauna?
Well, I believe it's something like 600 calories an hour.
So it's like a workout where you're just sitting still
and watching a movie, and your heart, it's really hard to stay in. You can get lost in a movie, it's easier to sit there. So it's really good for your heart. It's really good for toxins, things like mercury, things you want to get out of you. That's really helpful. Plus, if you're into woo-woo stuff, if you have an ailment, chances are someone's going to be like getting an infrared sauna. So I just get into one before anything's going on. But being really hot and then being really cold just makes me feel high. I love it.
So sorry we argued. That's our first argument. Tell me this. What is the film?
Well, now I don't feel safe.
No,
I said Field of Dreams, Val was like, it's going to be controversial. She knew.
He's not going to like that.
She knew.
He's not going to like that.
Yeah.
What is the film that means the most to you? Not necessarily the film itself is any good, but the experience you had around seeing the film that will always make it special to you, Pete Holmes.
Okay. I do have two answers, but I'm going to give you one. And then if you want the other one, you can have it. Because I want to respect the format.
Thank you.
When I was a waiter at Bennigan's, which makes immediate sense if you think about my face. Like, you can just see it. I was a waiter at Bennigan's. You used to get two holidays off. I believe it was New Year's, Christmas, Thanksgiving, New Year's Day. New Year's Eve, New Year's Day was two. And you had to work two of them, and you could get two of them off. So I was, I asked for Thanksgiving and Christmas, let's say. Good choices, because I don't really like New Year's. Then Jim Gaffigan, who had... I had opened for him one other time. No, I hadn't opened for him ever. I had never met him. So I'm a young comedian, and Jim Gaffigan is like looking for an opener. And my friend Dan Kaufman, another comedian, was like, can you open for Jim Gaffigan the weekend of New Year's at the Cleveland Improv? And I was like, of course, I'm only working at Vanagon's. I was grateful for the job. I needed the job. But I'm trying to become a comedian. So I said yes. And then I called Vanagon's, and my manager's name was Matt Neary. And I think I left a message saying, like, I mean, however sweet I am now, times a million, just a sweet little baby boy, soft and clammy hand and ruddy cheeked. And I'm just calling and I'm like, hi, I'm convinced I'm going to get fired. I'm saying, I know I already had these dates off, but I need to get New Year's off as well, because it was coming up. And I'm so sorry. I understand. I probably was like, I understand if this doesn't work, and panicking.
Let me go.
And I left the message. And then my wife at the time, my ex-wife, and I went and saw Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers. And when I tell you that the Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers was about a comedian taking a weekend and thinking he was going to be fired for it. The movie Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers was about a comedian in Chicago who worked at Bennigan's who thought he might get fired. Every orc was just the impending loss of financial security and my job and what a fool I was. And the Eye of Sauron was like, you're giving up a stable gig to do this. You probably made $150 at the Cleveland Improv. You're going to lose money driving there. Like, it's a waste. You're an idiot. The whole movie. And I have that ticket stub. I have a frame in the house. It's the first $10 I ever made from stand-up. And in the frame, not behind the glass, but tucked in the frame, is the movie ticket for the Two Towers. Because it was my little Frodo's hero's journey, going like, as silly as it is, and it is, I was doing something I was really scared. I thought I was going to lose my job. And he did not fire me. And that's why I thanked Matt Neary on my first album. Like, if you read the liner notes, I thank Matt Neary. Because he didn't fire me, and it all worked out.
That's so nice, Pete Holmes.
Isn't that a fun
one? A story of you going to the cinema and not feeling shame. I really liked it.
Thank you. Yeah. The other one is Shakespeare in Love, because that's the first movie I made out with somebody. And it was me and the woman. First time ever. And there's boobies on the screen, and I'm making it's like, what is happening? It's as close.
Double boobies.
I was like a three-way. There's Gwyneth, and I'm actually making out with someone here. And my friend Nick, and I had dinner with Nick not that long ago, and we laughed about this. He was sitting next to me, and I heard him go, what do I do? Like, he didn't. He was so uncomfortable. There was someone with Nick. He just was like, I don't know what to do. Because we were going at it. We were Shakespeare.
That was your first time?
First time making out in a movie, yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
My first date was the movie Shine. I remember that. Jeffrey Rush.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Not as sexy.
Not a sexy film.
No.
Oh, look at him having a breakdown. Kiss me. what's the film you most relate to, Pete Holmes?
This is going to make you laugh, I think, because it's an absurd answer. But Brett, the film I most relate to is the Bourne trilogy. And I'm going to tell you why.
I love it.
Do you?
You don't need to. You don't need to.
You get it?
But you can. Yeah, I actually think I do, but please tell me.
Val was like, he's going to laugh in your face that this like soft, amorphous, loud, Hillary Swank mouth comedian is relates to Jason Bourne, like Matt Damon, peak Damon, kicking ass.
Peak Damon, yeah. Go
here's why. Because Jason Bourne is a movie about getting away from your family. It's about a lot of things, but it's about getting away from your family. So he is raised, traumatized by the government. He's traumatized by them. Like, and I love my family. They did their best. And there's trauma in any childhood. It's just heavy. It's just a lot. There's grown-ups, like Greek gods in your house. They're strange and they yell and there's weird feelings. So there's that's you getting dunked. Can you commit to this? Can you commit to this program? I can't. Dunk. I can't. Can you commit to this program? Guy even sounds like my dad. I can't. Dunk. So he's trained. His trauma does to what a lot of people, trauma can often lead to skills. I'm a highly sensitive person. Again, I'm not trying to, I love my parents. I'm only going to say that one more time. But because they were unpredictable people, I learned to be a finely tuned instrument. I could see a fight coming a mile away. It's where I got my sense of humor, and I could divert it. I spoke dad, I spoke mom, I spoke my brother. No one else spoke anyone else. I really believe that. I was interpreting, I was keeping the peace. That's Jason Bourne going, I know I can run for 45 minutes at this altitude. I know the best place to find a gun is in the cabin of that truck. That's the result of trauma. His trauma was training. But a lot of us, our radioactive spider bite is suffering, is some sort of feeling of being out of control, especially when you were small, right? So the rest of the movies is him trying to get away from his family as they chase him, using the skills he got from being with them to avoid them. So it's just people in a room with computers going, where is he? We gotta get him. That's my mom going, why don't you call on Sunday? Why aren't you coming home for Thanksgiving? Why aren't you coming home for Christmas? And I'm ducking. I'm doing kung fu. I'm trying to build boundaries. I'm trying to meet people. I'm trying to have a life of my own. And then at the end, he realizes the only way out is through, and he goes back and faces his family. He goes back to the scene of his trauma, now having had great love, which is Marie. So he was transformed by a great love. He was loved for who he grew up to be, not who people see him as he was as a child. He's loved for who he grew up to be. And that love transforms him and empowers him to go back to his father, who is like my father. And he doesn't kill him. That's the point. He doesn't kill him. You have to forgive reality and you have to forgive your tormentors. They were doing what they thought was best or what they thought they needed to do to get love, to get security or whatever it might be. And he doesn't kill him. That is the point. We go back to our families and we forgive them.
Yes. Yes. That's what I call an ultimatum. That is very good. That is a very good answer. There's no way I was going to laugh in your face for that. All made sense to me.
Good.
Speaking of Pete Damon, what's the sexiest film you've ever seen, Pete Holmes?
I can't believe you said that because my sexiest film is a Damon film.
The Martian.
I can't come without Dead Cats or Red Sand. I need one or the other. Look, here's my first answer. Then we'll get to the Damon answer. And I hope you appreciate it as a comedy man, as a comedian. I listen to this podcast. I hear people say, "Y tu mama también." I hear people saying fucking on the nose, sexy shit. And I'm just going like, get the fuck out of here. Blue is the warmest color. Like, get out of here. I'm not saying that movie doesn't turn me on. I'm just saying like that to me, my weird answer, and it goes back to when I was a kid, is comedy nudity will always have a special place.
Interesting.
In my boners.
Gratuitous comedy nudity, yeah.
Because when I watch Y Tu Mama Tambien, I'm like, I don't have a best friend. I'm not like a good-looking, reckless-haired boy who's good at soccer and like is charming and drinks tequila. And like, I have no entry point to that. I have no entry point to Blue is the Warmest Color. I am no one in that movie. Show me that movie. Where's the guy that's going like, hello, ladies? Like, trying too hard, boob shadow, rubber bands on his braces. Boom! Get the fuck out of here. I didn't have a best friend like that, and I certainly didn't have a three-way with a gorgeous older woman. That is not reality. My closest way to sex and sexuality was comedy. Not only because it's how I first saw it. Scrooged, I think her nipples are showing. Excuse me? Do you remember that in Scrooged?
I don't remember that, but I'm not saying you're wrong.
I remember it. No, if it's not in there, it's because...
remembering it, it's been censored.
It's in the third act, meaning it's towards the end, and Bill Murray. So there's me. I'm not saying I'm Bill Murray, but as a kid, I'm like, there's Bill Murray. And there's a beautiful woman, and they bring her up, and it's like a joke? How is this a joke? It's just Boner Town. They're going, look at her outfit. Her nipples are showing. That's the joke? I'm at home going, those are probably some of the first boobs I ever saw in my life. Not only are they boobs, it's sort of like a striptease. It's like kind of visible. That's like driving me crazy. Kentucky Fried Movie with the boobs on the shower glass. Naked Gun when he's he's on the ledge and he reaches over. It's not exactly an appropriate joke. It doesn't age well. But it was a buxom woman. These are the airplane during the turbulence, just boobies run by. So for the weirdest answer, but the most honest answer is comedy nudity still has like a neural pathway in my brain where I'm like, oh my God. Because everybody's having a good time. Like I can see them like discussing the gag and the woman's like in my fantasy is like, in on it and enjoying it. And even that feels fun to me. But I could see myself in that situation. I could be Bill Murray. I'm not a beautiful Latin boy playing soccer with a very voluptuous woman. I am like a wisecracking, sort of uncomfortable guy. And comedy boobs were like the first boobs that I saw.
Comedy boobs is an excellent answer, Pete Holmes. I'm going to give you 7 points, so you're back on 10. All right, let's get to the subcategory, troubling boners, worrying widons, film you found arousing, you weren't sure you should.
Cats. I'm just kidding.
No, they were all alive in that. You weren't into it.
My answer is Talented Mr. Ripley. I know that's, I want to be clear. I don't think it's troubling to be gay. You know what I'm saying? But like, as a straight person, I think it's just incredible filmmaking where it transcends sexuality.
Yeah.
So when I say troubling, it might be better to say unexpected. When I watch Damon and Jude Law in the bath, sort of playing grab ass, and like, they're both just Greek god bodies. Like they're just, if they just stood still in a museum, a crowd would form. You know what I'm saying? So I'm watching it, and every time I watch that movie, Val is a real connoisseur of sexual tension, and the sexual tension in that scene, I relate to it, and I relate to the forbidden love of it. Like, I find that to be unexpected. Yeah. I don't know if it's troubling, but...
I get you. It's very sexy, actually. Jude Law is fucking hot. I get it. I get what you're saying.
But Brad, you know what it is? He's catching Matt Damon being horny for him, being attracted to him.
Yeah.
And as someone who grew up in the church and was really, you know, sort of traumatized by that, that's how I felt my whole life. One of my jokes is I had to come out of the closet as straight, because like admitting that you like boobs in the Christian world is still pretty naughty. Like, it's like, you fucking weirdo. Like, it's gross. It's like, keep that to yourself. And Damon's shame and wanting Jude Law, even though those, you know, male bodies aren't my, you know, cup of tea or whatever you want to say, the feeling of the movie, I get lost in it. And I'm like, I know what it's like to sneak a peek at somebody that you're really attracted to and you don't want them to know. Because, I mean, that's what my whole adolescence felt like, because I thought sex was so shameful.
But it's also really good filmmaking, because you are seeing him through Matt Damon's eyes, and Matt Damon is obsessed and falling in love or lust, and you are too. You are on that journey.
And not to ruin it, but then when he kills him, I mean, that is... It's the opposite of Moonlight. It's like he's resisting... Yeah. The love that's chasing him. And so many of us do that. We would rather believe bad news than good news.
Pete Holmes. Objectively, what's the greatest film of all time? Might not be your favorite, but what is the greatest film of all time?
What is your greatest?
I would say Don't Look Now is arguably top three greatest films of all time. Wow. I don't necessarily want to watch it every day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But as a sort of art, the art of cinema, the pinnacle of cinema, I go, it don't get much better than Don't Look Now. That is a fucking, you know.
I hate to be an old person saying they don't make them like that anymore, but they don't make them like that anymore. I just feel like you'll relate to this. The trend in art of chasing what people want is so insane. Because when you go like, well, this was popular and these franchises were popular and this nostalgia is popular and this actor is popular and this style of director and let's put them all together in like a can't miss movie really makes my dick soft. Because you know what no one would ever say if you got, I mean, smart people. I mean, film loving, good people, smart people, not dum-dums, not like a focus group, like real good people. And you said, what do you want? What kind of film do you want? None of them are ever going to say, well, Donald Sutherland loses a child. Not much happens. He's in Venice and he's plagued by the loss. Giving people what they don't know they want is what art should be. You didn't know. And you know how I knew what I didn't know I wanted? It was because I'm paying attention to my dreams. I'm paying attention to my subconscious. I'm in my body. I'm listening to those cold spots in my own inner pool. I'm having the courage to fly a kite into a black hole and I pull it back and I go, oh my God, I think Donald Sutherland loses a child. Like, instead of reverse engineering, how do we give them what they already had so that we can make sure they buy it again is fucking shit.
It's fucking shit. And it's always wrong. It's always it's always like the thing that is the breakout hit at some point, it happens in films and it might be a Western. And then everyone goes, oh, we got to make a shitload of Westerns. Yeah. And then the Western dies again. And then the thing that actually is the breakout hit was not the thing you were planning. And then you just... It's a fucking cycle, like people like to be surprised. They just don't think they do.
Well, there was a time, you know, I worked with Judd and Judd's movies were very surprising at the time.
Yeah.
40-year-old virgin, these like lo-fi, low status anti-heroes. Like, believe it or not, younger listeners, but like before the 40-year-old virgin, comedies were kind of like, I had a comedy pitch about like two guys that go to a school where the ratio's all fucked up. So there's 13 girls to every guy. That was an idea you would have for a movie in the 90s. Yeah. You'd be like, I think that would be a good movie. It's like Pauly Shore. Watch Biodome. There's like, it does not age well. There's like shit in there that you're just like, that is not cool. Yeah. But that's what comedies were. It was to say grab ass again. It was like, we're horny and you know it. And we're scoring and we're cool guys. And then Apatow comes along and he's like, no, this guy's never had sex and he's a loser and or whatever. I'm playing with your idea of loser. So then what happens after 40-year-old virgin knocked up super bad? You start seeing Dinner for Schmucks. I'm not putting down, these are earnest people trying to make a great movie, but it was chasing a trend. I think some of them worked, but then it did start to overstay its welcome when they were trying to imitate the Apatow model. My answer though, Brett.
Yes.
Is There Will Be Blood. And that's my answer.
You are correct. You are correct. You got it right. Correct. No, you're correct. I led you down a path to see where you were going, and you picked the right film. That is absolutely right.
Correct. Movie is so good, and it changed.
So good.
Changed my life, and in a country, America, that only glorifies consumerism and achievement, to have a movie that skewers and shames and belittles and shines a light on what it's like when you're just cutting throats and taking the money, and actually breaks that character, and shows just how sad that is. What an achievement. That's giving people something they didn't know they want. You know what I mean? It tricks you into being
like... Have you changed
your life? Just... It got me in touch with my anger. He's so mad at Paul Dano's character, at Eli. And I was like, I think if we're being honest, when he's like,
aren't you an ambassador of the Holy Spirit? Can't you heal my son? I was like, yeah, we all sort of feel that way, don't we? Like, we all have that anger. This is what I'm talking about. Forgiving reality is the first forgiveness. Is like, it is a nightmare at times. It's a beautiful and it's a nightmare. And it's both. It's holding those two together. And here's a guy who just wants to win, just wants to make it blow gold everywhere. Like, when I can't get a minute to come back into my office and work, I hear his voice going like, if I don't get to write this screenplay, then it can't blow gold everywhere. Like, it's the voice of the untethered ego, the drive that would literally kill to not be a schmuck, to not be a loser. But the fact that it has the honesty, it's like movies that show violence but aren't honest about the repercussions of violence aren't always great movies. There's you know, Kill Bill,
yeah,
and stylized violence. But I'm saying, like, real movies to me show a fault, blind ambition and greed, and then show the consequence of it. He's alone in that sad old man sweater, killing sort of his only friend, you know, like his frenemy. He murders him. He's going to get caught this time, you know.
And he sits like he's shat himself, like he's sat in a diaper, and he sort of goes, finished.
Yeah, that's
like,
right.
Come and wipe my bum. It's like that sort of it.
The message of that movie is, to one of them is, having all of your needs met or having everything you ever wanted is not the answer. And unfortunately, there's too many movies, there's too many comedians even, where the subtext is, if you get money, you'll be okay. And I just, anything that puts a dick in that cake is okay by me.
Yeah, yeah. Hard agree. I'm giving you 500 points, that's weird. What's the film that you could or have watched the most over and over again?
I am an obsessive movie watcher. I think we've talked about, we both love Mad Men. I've watched the whole of Mad Men way too many times. But the best answer, and I have 7 or 8 movies written down here, the best answer for the movie that I always want to watch, meaning I watched it a week ago and I would watch it with you this afternoon, is About Schmidt. I can't stop watching About Schmidt. I think it's perfect. I think it's funny. And it helps me make sense a little bit of the world. Like, it really, something, here's what it is, man. Is like, a lot of times I go around, you know how Thoreau said the massive men lead lives of quiet desperation?
Right, yes.
That makes me sad. And that weight needs expression in art. And when I watch that movie, I go like, look, here's an ordinary life, but it's filled with it. If you look closely, everything is there. And he learns that when he gives the toast at the end of the movie, you see that he's learned to love the imperfections, that he stopped wanting reality to be something that it's not. And he starts loving it for what it is. And it happens because of a loss. My homeboy Richard Rohr calls that falling upward. He falls upward. He loses his wife. I don't want to give too many spoilers. That's in the trailer, I'm sure. And he just keeps getting broken again and again and again. And to quote Leonard Cohen, it's the cracks that let the light through. At the end, he stops hoping for something else. He stops doing what's expected, and he starts waking up to what is and forgiving it. You see a man forgiving it. He forgives it. And we all motherfucking have to forgive reality. And it's for you. It's for you to forgive it. That's About Schmidt.
Okay. Very good.
You're so British. I'm going to make you cry. I'm going to make you cry, you salty Brit. I heard you say you don't cry. I'm going for it. I'm actually not going for it.
But you're close.
I also just think it's a perfectly made movie.
Really good. What is the film? We don't like to be negative, Pete, although you tried it earlier and I didn't like it today. but now
it was a leading question.
It was leading, but I wasn't expecting Field of Dreams to get dunked on, and not on my watch. But what's the worst film you've ever seen?
I'm gonna say maybe this is a cop out because so many people don't like these movies, but the newer, any newer thing where Superman's in it, I hate it because I don't like that style where it's like, we're not even trying to look like we're not on a green screen. There's just like blue green smoke in every scene. Everybody's saying what they are thinking. Like there's no subtext. There's no appreciation for how characters and human beings actually communicate, which is sometimes you say the opposite of what you're thinking or feeling. I mean, pay attention. You do that. Everyone does that. You say you love something and you hate it, or you say you want to do something and you don't want to do it. But in those movies, everybody's just expressing their clean, freshly faxed in opinion, and they say it. Lois Lane is like, I'm a hothead reporter and I'm going to chase this story, and I don't care if you've never seen a woman in this position. I'm going to show you what's what. And then she does. And Superman is just not a compelling hero. He's invincible. Like we're saying, like, I like wounds. I like things that remind us of the way that the universe works. And the way the universe works is it works with your wounds. It works with your wounds. And Superman loses his planet, but fuck off. You were a baby and you had a, you know what I mean? You didn't know them. You don't know Krypton. Yeah. And then nothing hurts you except Kryptonite. So it's always Kryptonite. It's going to be Kryptonite. That's going to be the twist. But there was one little piece of kryptonite. Or it's going to be two super invincible people bashing into each other with no stakes. This is going to be more controversial, but I have the same problem with Harry Potter. It's magic being shot at magic. And you're like, which magic is stronger? It's just pew, 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 pew. Oh, yeah? Pew, 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 pew. And I'm like, this is stakeless. This is the definition of nonsense. Like, I'm not saying those are bad movies. But Superman is just too impenetrable things trying to penetrate each other. It's a waste of time.
Look, I say I hate CGI, hate it, unless I don't notice it and then I'm impressed by it.
Wilson, the volleyball? That's a reference for Val. She's going to listen to this. She'll know what I mean. Make me care about a volleyball. Don't make me not care about a city. That's the magic of cinema.
That's so true.
We care about tokens. Like, we care about them. We imbue them with meaning.
What? No, Pete Holmes, you're in comedy. You're a comedian. You're very funny. What's the film that made you laugh the most?
Here's two things I'm not. I'm not a guy who gets stoned a lot and watches movies. I actually think it ruins them. And I forget what the other one was. But, I also don't like bad movies. You know how people like bad movies?
Yeah.
Like, I've seen The Room. It's fine. I prefer The Disaster Artist. I like the movie about the movie. But Kung Pao Foot Fist Way, if you're stoned and you don't know what it is. I don't know if I still don't know what it is. I saw it and I still don't know what it is. Val and I watched it and I got stoned and it's so confusing and strange. You stop trying to understand it and you just let it happen that he's fighting a baby. And I just started weeping with like healing laughter. I was like, they've done it. They figured out what's funny. And it's Kung Pao, Foot Fist Way. And I'm sure everybody says Borat. That was my sober, hardest laugh, was Borat in the theaters. But Kung Pao, Foot Fist Way.
Really good. P. Holmes, you've been wonderful. Of course you have. No one expected anything less from you. However, when you were trying to save some dead cats and you covered yourself in moisturizing cream, body or lube, and you went through a hole in the wall and you put nipple clamps on your nipples and sucked into the size of the bed, and then you got a boner, and then you
and as I died, the aneurysm made me jizz. Yes.
Yeah, then you had an aneurysm for no good reason, and then you jizzed, and then you were dead and surrounded by dead cats. I'm passing by with a coffin. You know what I'm like? I wonder what Pete's up to. I think he's in town doing a show. I think he's staying in this motel. I knock on the door. Pete, oh, he's very quiet. I can't even hear cats meowing. He's always got cats with him. I've knocked down the door. There you are. I'm not the first one there. There's loads and loads of press in the room. They're just taking pictures. Like, listen, I know what it looks like. I know this guy. Trust me. Trust me, he was trying to save these cats, I'm sure. This is just a terrible tragedy. Get out of here, guys. And I put you in the coffin, but I also put all the dead cats in there with you because I know that's what you'd want.
Of course.
I want you to enjoy coming for the rest of eternity until you press a button saying something happens.
And I have half dollars on my eyes and they have dimes on their eyes.
Yeah.
Little kitty eyes.
Yeah. And and your boner is still there, which makes the coffin difficult. I have to chop off your boner and just mix it up with the dead cats. Anyway, the coffin is absolutely packed. Boners, dead cats in you. And the nipple clamps.
Of course.
Industrial strength. I'm not strong enough, and I'm strong.
Yeah.
Only enough room in this coffin to put one DVD into the side. Jam it in the side for you to take across to the other side. And on the other side, there is nothing. There's movie night every night. And one night, it's your movie night. What film are you taking to show everyone when it's your movie night, Pete Holmes?
You know, that's interesting. I think the DVD that cleans the lens. You know that one? It has the little brush and you hear it go. Because I'm there to help everyone watch their movies.
That's very kind.
It's not the movie that I would want to show in the No Thing Other Life or whatever. But the movie that has the most bav or zhuzh or like, it's just like a relic. Like I consider like a DVD of this movie to be like a holy item. Is the documentary Into Great Silence. You have to say it carefully because it sounds like Into Great Silence. Into Great Silence. It's where these French filmmakers had access to this monastery that they had never given access to. And it is, you can't watch it, in my opinion, especially if it's in a theater, which I've never had the pleasure, but I've, you know, turned the lights off and did my best. It just is the feeling of when someone reminds you that this is it. You know what I mean? It slows you down to the point where you feel like you're underwater. And there's ASMR in it. There's like cutting felt robes with big shears. And there's like making soup. And it's just like monks looking out a stone window, just watching the sunrise. There's no story. There's nothing. It shows them shoveling snow. But if you see someone who's present shoveling the snow, who knows that that's all they're doing is shoveling snow. Shoveling snow is enough to convert you or help you. I don't mean convert to a religion. I mean transform you. I mean, it's enough to make you go, as I hope you are talking to me, and I hope as everyone listening, this is it. This is it. And it's enough. And it's enough. Not what am I going to listen to after this? What am I going to eat after this? Not how much sleep am I going to get tonight? But just dropping anchor in this. And the great Eckhart Tolle says, how you feel right now is how you feel about your life. We think it's like this summary. Like we're going to do all these cool things. And at the end, we'll look at the summary, like the recap, the season recap, and go, that was a good life. Fuck that shit. It's just this. How you feel right now is how you feel about your life. And a movie like that will make you feel beautiful just washing the dishes.
Well, they're going to have a lovely time with you. Pete Holmes, it is lovely being a void looking into your void. Is there anything you would like to tell people to look out for or listen to or watch?
Ted Lasso season 2. Out now. Sure. Can Nate have an Android now? Can he, now that he's wicked?
An Android?
Yeah, an Android telephone.
An Android phone. Of course, he has to now.
Yeah. Now that he's bad, he has to have a Google phone. Yeah. Well, Smallwood will be out, but I always like to draw people. Listen to Brett's episode of my podcast, one of the best ghost stories we've ever had on the show.
Pete's podcast is really, really brilliant. If you haven't listened to it, I highly recommend it.
That's what I'd like to promote. But specifically, your episode is a great place to start because I already like you, and that's a fun side of you.
Well, God bless you. Pete Holmes, you've been a joy. Thank you.
Thanks, man.
And have a wonderful no-thing death. Take care.
So that was episode 171. Hope you enjoyed it very much. Head over to patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra 30 minutes of chat, secrets and video with Pete. Go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating, but write about the film that means the most to you and why. It's lovely to read, it helps numbers, etc. It's very much appreciated. Thank you so much to Pete for doing the show. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics. Lisa Leiden for the photography. Thank you all very much for listening. And I hope everything is great with you all out there. Come and join me next week for another smasher of a guest. And I'm not telling you who it is, but it's a big one. So that is it for now. In the meantime, I hope you all have a lovely week. And please, now more than ever, be excellent to each other. Sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.